Yeah. Hopefully you're not rigid all the time. And
so to speak. See, anything, folks, anytime you talk about sex,
like with a everything is a double entendre. Kid over here.
That's true. But you know, anytime you talk about sex, everything you talk about is a double entendre. Just discharging that right now, so to speak. So,
why don't we just invite Beavis and Butthead on, you know?
We don't have to. You got me.
Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I am your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Well, hello, Judy, and hello, listeners. Our topic for today is...
The Erotic Equation, and more on husband's cross-dressing.
Yes, indeed. Let me parse that a little for folks. It's kind of a two-parter, although they are a bit related, but it's a two-parter. We're going to talk about the Erotic Equation, and then we actually had a listener comment on an earlier, what has turned out to be a very popular episode of ours that we did a while ago. So we'll get to that in just a bit. But before we do that, let's just give you a little bit of hype here, folks.
Okay, hype away.
Yes. First of all, the podcast itself, tell your friends and subscribe and rate us and give us a review and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And also share our social media posts, because that's how people find out about it. And I also want to put in a plug for comments. You know, send us your reactions. You can email us at bruce@ctn7.com or judy@ctn7.com. Or you can just go to our website, which surprisingly enough is...
ctn7.com.
Who knew? That's the number 7, ctn7.com. And CT for couples therapy, folks, in case you haven't already figured
that
out.
Yeah, we're not from Connecticut.
We're not from Connecticut, no. ctn7.com. And when you go there, you'll see it. There are easy ways to send us a message and give us your feedback, make suggestions for guests. We've already lined up some really fascinating guests coming up in the next few weeks. Mm-hmm. I never like to give promissory notes.
No, because you never know what can happen.
Never know what can happen.
We've had people who get COVID, cancel at the last minute, forget to show up.
It has happened.
All of the above.
I will say, just in terms of all the folks we've had, that those are rare events, but they've happened.
Want to say anything.
Yeah, but there's some good stuff. Mm-hmm. Some fun people I think we're going to be interviewing. And if you want to suggest yourself, you can do that right from our website, which is, of course, ctn7.com, in case you forgot that. And also want to put in a plug for the books that I wrote, the first one of which got all this started, which mm-hmm. is...
Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
And you know, there's been a little bit of a spike in sales in that one, even though it came out a few years ago.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised.
And I wonder, don't know this, but I wonder if some of the spike in sales on that book is because of the release of my new book, which is...
It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong.
And that one had its little moment in the sun as a bestseller, a number one bestseller in its category mm-hmm. on Amazon, and well worth the read. So please get it anywhere you can find books. And if you happen to do the Amazon thing, we really would like people to rate it and review it and stuff like that. So that would definitely help people find out about it. So the other thing I want to put in a plug for is my newsletter, Dr. Chalmers' newsletter.
Ah, yes, the newsletter.
And if you go to the multiply aforementioned website, ctn7.com, you will see a little magic box appear that if you click upon it, it will take you to a little form where you can sign up for my newsletter. When you sign up for my newsletter, you will get, free of charge, a link that will help you download a copy of, I'm calling it a booklet, not a book, because it's pretty short, but it is a very pithy,
very informative.
Informative little book, which is called 7 Words to Jumpstart Your Love Life. And not surprisingly, those listeners to this podcast already know what the 7 words are.
Yes, they do.
The 7 words are...
Be kind, don't panic, and have faith.
And you'll see how those three principles embedded in those 7 words help you, as it says, jumpstart your love life. And so I hope you will go ahead and do that. If you don't want to get my newsletter, You can get that book by going to Amazon and shelling out, I think, what is it, $2.99 or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you do that when you can get it for free.
But yes, of course.
Exactly. So let's get into our topic.
Yes, let's get into our topic. Well, I guess let's start with the erotic equation.
Yes, the erotic equation. Now, there may be some listeners to this podcast who will recognize that phrase. It's not one that I invented. And you ever have ever a book that you've been meaning to read for 20 years?
Mm-hmm.
You know those?
Yes, yeah. Yes, I do.
Well, this was one of them for me. and I'm putting in a nice big, you know, shout out to this book. It's by Jack Morin. It's called The Erotic Mind. And so, as the name implies, it's talking about the whole notion of eroticism and how that plays out in people. And Jack Morin is the one who came up with this really fascinating concept called the erotic equation. Now, we've done some podcasts before. I think we did one on the erotic charge, you know, that notion of that sort of spark between, well,
right?
It's
like reigniting chemistry, the spark. Right?
Like chemistry, yeah. What's, you know, you can tell when you're with a couple, sometimes, can't always tell, but often you can tell, wow, this couple, they're kind of hot with each other.
Mm-hmm. and you feel that chemical thing going.
Yeah, and I don't mind noting that people have commented on our podcast and said they note that with us.
Yes, they do.
They do. And they do, I will simply say, for a reason.
Yeah.
That it is very much present, and that's why, one of the reasons this is so much fun for us, I think, is because it gives us a chance to just, you know, display that in a way that we wouldn't get arrested for in public. So we do enjoy that. But what Jack Morin came up with is the erotic equation. So let me tell you what he said the erotic equation is, and then we can talk about what that means. We're doing this because I think it's fascinating. The erotic equation, according to Jack Morin, is the following. Attraction plus obstacles equals excitement. Let me say that again in case you didn't get a chance to jot that down. Attraction plus obstacles equals excitement. Now, by excitement, he means that sense of, you know, being turned on.
Right.
Right? What is it that turns us on? It's not just attraction. Attraction is, of course, part of it. You know, how can I put this? If we were either one of us, so to speak, playing for the wrong team, you know, we are both heterosexual.
Correct.
If you were a man, I could respect you, I could love you, I could even find you attractive, but I wouldn't be excited about having sex with you because I'm not into having sex with men. What can I tell you? I'm not wired that way.
Mm-hmm.
If I were gay, I would be, but I'm not. So it's the idea there is that attraction can exist, but there are plenty of people who are attracted to their partner in a sense, but if there aren't any obstacles, that gets boring after a while. And what Morin talks about at great length in his book is, what does he mean by obstacles?
Yeah, like do you have to go through all kinds of things to get to that person? Is that what makes it exciting?
Well,
it can't just be attraction and hubba hubba?
Yeah, well, of course it can. So, and like, he notes that. So let me make, again, I'm not going to keep bothering to say this is what Morin says because, first of all, I'm paraphrasing and I'm filtering it through my own understanding. So don't either blame or credit Morin for what I'm saying here. Read the book yourself. It's worth the read. As I will note, by the way, I said I've been meaning to read this book for 20 years. Came out in the 1990s. It's been around for a long time. And it has, it's a little dated.
Uh-huh.
You can tell. So I've just throw that in for what it's worth. He talks about, and other people have talked about this too, what do we have between us? You know, what does any couple that's working well have? First of all, there is that sense of romantic attraction.
Mm-hmm.
There's that sense of, oh my God, you complete me. You know, those kinds of things.
Uh-huh.
It's like, ooh, I want to be with you. I want to live with you. I want to make a life with you. I want to marry you. You know?
Right.
We felt that in our relationship, and that's why we ended up getting married, right?
Yes, but there were some obstacles.
There were some obstacles, although, well, we'll get around to that, but I don't even think the obstacles that we particularly encountered were the ones I'm talking about, you know, per se. Yeah, we had to wait
until
until I was divorced, yeah.
Oh, then.
Well, now I gotta say a couple things. It's okay, folks. My ex was happy about it, too. We'll just leave it at that.
I was not a marriage wrecker.
No, not at all. Yes. No, not at all. That's not how it was.
You can watch our earlier podcast for the scoop.
Yeah, we did a podcast.
We did one on our story.
Our story, so check it out. But no, what the point is that romantic attraction can be very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't always sexual. There's often an element. It often, you know, it's not like it gets in the way of a sexual attraction, but it's not necessarily identical to it. There's a sense of wanting to join and make a life with someone. And that it's almost like you want to become one person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you unify. And that's, I think, in a marriage, in a monogamous marriage, that's an important thing to happen. That's a lovely thing to happen. They you know, I should have looked up the derivation of this word. The word they use, that Morin uses, and he quotes, he did not coin this term, it's limerence. Limerence is that sense of when you want to join together and, you know, become one, in a sense, that romantic attraction.
Yes, a state of being infatuated or obsessed with another person, typically experienced involuntarily and characterized by a strong desire for reciprocation of one's feelings, but not primarily for a sexual relationship.
Yeah, exactly. That is what limerence. Did they give the etymology in there?
Not at the initial. No, let's see. No, just as psychology.
So I don't know what the etymology of that word is. But in any case, that's the word they use.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Oh, go ahead.
English from limer or limer,
mm-hmm,
and ence. Apparently, it's an arbitrary syllable, limer.
Okay.
1970s.
Oh, all right. So, whatever. So somebody made it up for whatever reason. But it's an important concept. You know, it's mm-hmm, like, yeah, that sense of romantic attraction. Where you just want the person to feel the other way and you worry about how are they feeling and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's that just really, I almost want to call it more of an animal sense of, I want to have sex with this person. I am so drawn to this person. I want to do
the
deed.
That's the heat.
That's the heat, yes. And that is more of an erotic attraction.
Right.
So I would claim, you know, and I'm sure this is reflecting my own biases, but I'm going to guess it coincides with yours too. You can tell me that a marriage works when you have both of those things.
Absolutely.
Marriage works really well when you have both. I have met lots of couples where they have one but not the other, and it's either way. I've met lots of couples where they have the limerence, but they just don't have any sexual spark. And they often show up in my office precisely because of that.
Hmm.
They're in my office and they're saying, we really love each other. We're, you know, we get along well. Everything, you know, we don't fight, but it's feeling sort of dead.
Yeah.
That's the sense where they have the limerence, but they don't necessarily have the erotic spark. Then there are folks I have met, lots of folks over the years I've met, where they have an amazing erotic spark, but they can't stand each other in lots of other ways. And which is to say they can't live together, or they don't feel like they're
uh-huh,
in the same tribe.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's the sort of thing that can happen with a perfect stranger. Do you know what I mean? Where there's this, you know, people will meet and they're on a trip or something and they end up having this amazing sex that they remember for the rest of their lives, but they have nothing else to do with the person. Those folks don't end up in my office. The people who end up in my office are the ones who decided to get married based on that and found they had nothing else in common.
Sure.
And that often doesn't work. But what Morin says in his equation is the attraction is necessary.
Right.
But just the attraction without any sort of obstacle. If you have a couple where they've got limerence, they've got things in common, they're playing for the right team, so to speak. It's like they're each other's type, you know, sexually.
Mm-hmm.
And they just enjoy each other and they fall into bed whenever they want to. And doesn't that sound lovely?
Yeah.
Except it tends to be kind of boring.
I don't know what's wrong with boring.
Well, I'll come back to that, actually. No, that's a great point. I like to invoke at this point something I think I've mentioned, and I know I mentioned this because in preparation for the second part of this podcast, I checked out our podcast that the comment on that one was, the one about cross-dressing.
Okay.
And I mentioned this in that one, too. In any case, there was research that was done, some of it actually at the University of Vermont, and we're, those of you who don't know, we're from Vermont. And what they found, they were studying couples who strive for equality. You know, they strive to not be governed by rigid gender roles.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you know, heterosexual couples we're talking about. And what they found was that the couples who had rigid gender roles tended not to be very happy with each other. The women tended to be kind of pissed off. It felt oppressive to a lot of people. The couples that strove to not be governed by that, it's not that they didn't, you know, adhere to it at all, it's that they just weren't going to let that decide for them, tended to be a lot more relaxed. They would negotiate things. They would talk with each other. They were a lot more relaxed with each other. They reported that things were generally pretty good, except for one area.
In the bedroom.
In the bedroom. They would say, sex lives are kind of blah. Uh-huh. You know, they felt that sort of, it just felt kind of something's missing, you know? Except for a subset of them who would tell the researchers, well, actually, we ended up, you know, it was blah for a while, but what we ended up figuring out to do is really made it very spicy. What we do is we play power games at bed. Power games, the idea being, again, doesn't have to be full-fledged dominant submission type stuff, but power games in the sense that somebody is in charge and the other person is yielding, and they know they're doing that. And it isn't, by the way, always the man in charge and the woman yielding. You know what I mean? That the masculine-feminine thing can be quite fluid, but...
They can take turns.
And they can take turns.
Switch on and off.
And sometimes they don't take turns because they realize, no, somebody wants to be dominated and somebody wants to be submissive, you know?
Ah.
Or somebody wants to dominate.
Uh-huh.
So the interesting thing being there, it's like, wow, that sense that if you're just cooperating all the time, that doesn't really do it for the erotic spark. That's what Morin is talking about. So there needs to be something that is an obstacle. Now, one of the things he defines as obstacles, I think you will relate to. If you just say, oh, and I've heard people say this, by the way, in the office. This is how they kind of approach their sex lives. Hey, want to have sex? Sure. And they go have sex.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, what's wrong with that?
Well, it might not be wrong with it for anybody, some people. For me, I need a little warning.
Well, I don't think it's warning that you need.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, go ahead.
Preparation.
Yes, preparation, but I think enticement.
Yeah.
You need a little teasing.
Yeah. If give me the eye earlier in the day, you know, it's like, okay, I know,
Yeah, but it's giving you the eye. It's not bluntly saying, hey, want to have sex?
No.
Right, because...
No, but, you know, I could tell with that look of you of yours that mean,
Indeed. Well, we're going to pause right now, folks. No, we're not. I'm just kidding.
No, so you know that when you go to bed that night, you know, you're in for a treat.
Yeah. But that's the point. The obstacle, as Morin would describe it, is anticipation.
Yeah.
And you notice the way you were describing that, because, you know, I could have accomplished the same thing by simply saying, want to have sex tonight? And I don't say that.
Yeah.
Usually. I don't think I say that. No, but that's exactly the point, because just to be, and again, those couples who tell me about that, it's not that that's a bad thing, right? There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But it isn't very sexy.
Yeah.
And the obstacle that Morin is describing is that obstacle that says it's a little bit of uncertainty. It's a little bit of, you know, you're not revealing all your cards all at once. Speaking of not revealing all your cards all at once, for many people, to be wearing something sexy is sexier than being naked.
Mm-hmm.
Why would that be true?
Well, because it's that surprise element, like when you get this beautifully wrapped package, it's like, ooh, you know, and it's like the half the fun is just opening it and the anticipation of what's coming up.
Well, the anticipation without totally knowing, even if you know, even if you're with somebody, hey, I know what you look like under there.
Right.
And it's lovely, but by golly, it's just fun to not know for a moment. That's one of the things that Morin describes as an obstacle. And all these things that are not quite well, and even more general, if you think you know the other person too well, you know, if I thought I know everything about you, there's nothing I would never know, not know about you. First of all, I claim that is simply not possible,
right?
Because we keep changing and learning, and you know, so who knows what's there. I don't even know myself that well. Well, I don't think anybody does. I think that's the point. You never know what's happening. You know,
you're right. You just don't know.
You don't know.
And you change, you know.
Yeah.
Hopefully you're not rigid all the time. And
so to speak. Awful. See, anything, folks, anytime you talk about sex,
like, like with a everything is a double entendre. Kid over here.
That's true. But you know, anytime you talk about sex, everything you talk about is a double entendre. Just discharging that right now, so to speak. So.
Why don't we just invite Beavis and Butthead on, you know?
We don't have to. You got me. Right. So, where was I? Oh, yeah. No, it's the point
we were
that...
discharging.
No, to be... Bridging. No, to be... To think you're the same person isn't very sexy.
Right.
That you have to be two individuals who are different. And that, look, in heterosexual couples, obviously, you're looking for different. Even gay couples are looking... They're not looking to be clones of each other.
Right.
It's those differences that are interesting. And part of the difference that's interesting is the fact of not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
So anticipation is something.
Sure.
Then Morin talks about a lot of attractions that frankly turn out to be not very successful because that erotic spark can be really stimulated by somebody's somebody's unavailability.
Uh-huh.
And again, you could say, well, that's not very healthy or very successful, let's put it that way. True, but worth looking at because that's the idea that everything has to go smoothly isn't very sexy. And that's where Morin points out something again, which I really enjoy and kind of fits with a lot of stuff I've said for years, which is, I suppose, why I enjoy it so much. Because, oh, he agrees with me. Or I agree with him. He was saying this before I was. You know, anxiety? Anxiety, you could say, is a buzz killer. Except it's not really that anxiety is a buzz killer. And I point this out in my book. What do I claim, not to put you on the spot, but what do I claim is the chief skill of intimacy?
Tolerating the anxiety.
Oh, you passed again. You must have read my books. Yeah, tolerating anxiety, yeah. Not avoiding it, but tolerating it. And the point is, what people do, and I point this out in Reuniting Spark, actually, I go into this in what I call the death spiral for passion. It's not anxiety that kills passion. It's what we do to avoid it.
Uh-huh.
We avoid intimacy,
right?
Because it's too scary. And so by doing that, you're avoiding the very obstacles that increase erotic spark.
True.
So it turns out that a lot of these things that you would say, well, I don't want obstacles in my relationship, actually are the very things that keep it hot. And that can keep it hot in a long-term relationship precisely because no matter how long you've been together, you don't know each other perfectly. You never know each other perfectly. And that's something that itself is kind of hot. It's like, ooh, what are we going to discover next?
Yeah.
And I think couples that do well in the eroticism department are the ones who have that sense. They're not afraid of that sense. They actually relish it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, ooh, you know, there's always something new happening. And I don't mean you have to try something kinkier and kinkier all the time, you know? I just mean you never know what you're going to discover.
That's true.
So, I don't know, what else? We need to say anything else about the erotic equation?
I think we're done with the math.
Yeah,
I think actually, the kind of math I could get behind, so.
Absolutely. This kind of equation is fun, right?
Right.
Oh, so, and what? Oh, I know what. We were just in the car earlier listening to the Beatles channel.
Uh-huh.
And I commented on this. We were listening to one of the Beatles song, and they were singing, "And in the end, the love you make is equal to the love you take," right?
No, the love you take is equal to the love you make.
Well, if they're equal, then what difference does it make? But you're right, yes. And I pointed out, I said, well, there's an erotic equation right there.
Uh-huh, that's true.
I don't think it has anything to do with Morin, but I just think it's cute.
Well, it's the Beatles, so it's of the course Beatles. It's erotic.
It's erotic, yeah, well, there you go, right. So.
So let's get into the... more on husband's cross-dressing.
Yes, and this topic, why are we talking about this today? A few days ago, somebody commented on YouTube. Let me point out to folks, you know, you can hear our podcasts from our website, ctn7.com. They're also all posted on YouTube, and so a lot of people find it that way as well. And one of our most popular podcasts, at least on YouTube, is the one where it's called My Wife Found Out I Cross-Dress.
Right.
Help. It was episode, I believe, 63. That's what I put on my notes here. I think it was episode 63.
Mm-hmm.
And we're on episode 108 or 109 or something. So, you know, you can tell it was a while ago, but probably about a year ago. It was about a year ago. We were in Florida when we made it. Yes.
That's
it was,
right.
It was about a little over a year ago. And we're doing this, folks listening to this later, we're doing this in March of 2023, and we made that podcast.
Happy St. Patty's Day to you. It's
happy
March 17th.
Patty's Day. Indeed, yes. We made that one back in 2022. So a woman, and she used, I don't know if it's a pseudonym or not, but this is what she's put in a public comment, so mm-hmm. I don't mind using the name she used.
Okay.
Shad.
Right.
And she wrote, and why don't you read what she put on the comment on
that. Okay. As a wife, you articulated a lot of what I'm feeling right now so well. Something not touched on, though, was that you feel so alone and that you can't talk to anyone because how bloody embarrassing, and it's not really my secret to share, is it?
I gotta believe, by the way, that Shad is British.
Maybe.
Or is English. Maybe not, but... Or maybe she's Irish. I don't know, but there's something about that
that
sounds...
Well, the bloody embarrassing.
Bloody, and,
I have known
and it's
Americans
not really my
to
secret
it.
To share, is it? You know, that sounds very British. Sorry, Shad, I'm not sure if that's true, but go ahead.
Okay. My husband has been wearing women's thongs and shaving his body hair, which is a huge turnoff, for a few years now. He started wearing the odd women's track pants and sweaters along the way, then girly socks. A couple of days ago, I found that he is trying to grow breasts with herbal supplements. That was a huge slap in the face for me. Like, wow, he's just going to keep getting worse, and there is no way I'm ever going to be able to be attracted to him again. The struggle is where to go from here. It's a scary place.
Wow.
Yeah.
So. And it is interesting because she's pointing out, what we were, if you note the title of the episode that she was commenting on, my wife found out I cross-dress. Help. It was a mm-hmm. letter we got from a man who was the one doing the cross-dressing.
Right. And he had kept this secret from his wife for over 25 years. Mm-hmm. And she discovered him when she came home.
Yeah.
He wasn't expecting her.
Yeah. And it was a shock. And it's interesting because he was clear in his letter, at least, he's not trans. He doesn't want to be, you know, he doesn't want to express himself like publicly as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something he finds, sexy about doing that. And I pointed out in the episode, and this is, I mentioned this in the episode, over the years, this isn't a rare phenomenon. It's not like it's everybody does it, but it's not at all a rare phenomenon. And so over the years, I've encountered a number of couples where this has been an issue. And the one thing I learned, which is kind of a general thing to learn, you know, whatever reasons I think people do this, there are as many reasons as there are people. You really have to listen to the particular people. But often it's a turn-on. It's like a sexual turn-on for him. The guy who wrote us where we did that episode was clear that he's heterosexual. He's attracted to women sexually mm-hmm. and to his wife
right.
sexually. They had a good sex life, he said. But there was something about this he just found it was a turn-on.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're talking about earlier about really not knowing your partner.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that people do keep and hide and... sometimes they come out and under strange circumstances. Sometimes they come out under illegal circumstances, you know, mm-hmm. People doing all kinds of shady things business-wise that spouses don't know about. And and sometimes they never come out because they never get discovered.
And of course, I never get to talk to those people.
Exactly.
You know, well, I suppose when I would do individual therapy, I could hear about things that people's spouses didn't
like
know
Shad
about.
Yeah, but like Shad is saying, it's so lonely.
Yeah.
You know, who do you turn to? It's embarrassing and it's shameful. It has so many elements of shame there that you hear from people that, you know, both the person, obviously, if he wanted his wife to know about it, he would have told her.
Yeah.
But not in this circumstance. She obviously knows about it. But in our original letter, she, you know, had no idea that her husband was doing this. And I think in a lot of cases, spouses don't know if they're partner is cross-dressing.
Well, yeah, in that original letter, it was pretty clear the reason he wouldn't tell his wife was because he feared exactly the response he got when she discovered him.
Yeah.
Though, of course, it isn't exactly the same thing because if he had told her, it wouldn't have been the same thing as had she walked in on it.
Yeah.
Because his telling her would have meant, okay, I no longer want to keep this a secret. Having said that, I mean, if he told her after 25 years, it wouldn't have been that much different from her discovering it after 25 years. A little different, I suppose, but he still kept it a secret for 25 years. So it's this, what Shad is writing about, of course, seems to be rather different because if he's trying to, he's not just wearing, you know, women's lingerie or underwear or whatever. He's, you know, he shaved his body hair, and
right,
he's trying
now
to grow
he's trying
breasts.
To grow breasts.
Yeah.
So that says, you know, he might be on the trans road.
Maybe. And, you know, here I want to put clearly, put this clearly, neither you nor I are experts at all on being trans or what that's like. And again, as usual, I have worked with folks over the years, of course, because, again, not a super rare phenomenon. And the one thing I know is I don't know everybody's story until they tell me. You know, it's like, so I invite anybody who's out there who can relate sort of to Shad's husband in a sense, you know, who has a sense of what that's like, either for yourself or if you have similar experiences, you know, possibly as the wife of someone like that, we would welcome your comments. But there's something going on here that is more than simply he's a heterosexual man turned on by, you know, wearing women's clothing.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about this. When, of course, Shad's bumping into the same thing that the wife of our letter writer last year was bumping into, and something this I have seen a lot in the office. The problem for her, if I may put it that way, is she is a heterosexual woman, which for her means it's a turnoff for her when he starts looking girly.
Right. She wants a man.
She wants him
to
look like a man.
She doesn't want a man that looks like a girl.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I could relate to that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and me too. And that's the thing, to the extent that, you know, she said it's a scary place. I mean, I have worked with couples where this sort of thing has happened. And I remember one in particular was fascinating to me because the wife was so supportive of her husband doing what he needed to do.
Uh-huh.
But it also meant that she needed to divorce him. She loved him and wanted the best for him. And he did not want a divorce.
And I think that's the struggle with a lot of the men that are in these relationships is they do love their wives. They want to stay in the marriage, but they also have this need to cross-dress.
Yeah, and in his case, it seems like a lot more than cross-dress.
Right.
And whatever it may be, and it just wasn't consistent with her being married to someone, being the heterosexual person she was. It wasn't consistent with her own sexual orientation. And, you know, it's interesting because her sexual orientation meant that the person she wanted to be a sexual partner with and married to needed to not seem like a woman.
Right. Needs to be masculine.
Needs to be masculine. And that, you know, and it was, I remember that particular couple was so fascinating to me, and I was very moved by, because there was such love there. It didn't negate the love, but they also, well, and look, it's not unlike, I've seen this a lot. How can I put this? I have a little experience of this myself. Let's just put it that way. When you discover that, oh my God, you know, I can love you, but it turns out we're not playing for the right teams, are we? You know, where one of a heterosexual couple discovers that they're gay and it's simply not going to work out if you want a sexual relationship. And so you can have love there, but it's not going to be, you know, that often leads to divorce.
Right.
So that may be where Shad ends up. It's hard to say. Obviously, she's struggling with that.
To your knowledge, and I have to believe there has to be like support groups for spouses or partners of cross-dressers. I just wonder if Shad could find a community where she can find people that are in a like-minded place.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I suspect, and again, don't know this either, and sort of apologies to folks out there thinking, well, shouldn't you know this if you're a couples therapist? And I probably should, but I don't. I would guess there would be nowadays support groups for spouses of people who are undergoing a transition of some kind.
Right.
That would sound likely to me nowadays. I don't know about, support groups for folks who cross-dress.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Now, I do know, again, have encountered occasionally, it's, again, not a lot in my practice, but I'm thinking of one couple at least anyway, where the partner did transition and they stayed together.
Yeah.
As a sexual couple.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm thinking of two off the top of my head, actually, that I know of.
Uh-huh.
And so that happens too.
And we know people that have,
and we know people.
Have gone through that.
Exactly, yes.
In our personal lives.
Yep. So it's, there's lots of ways, human beings have lots of ways of adapting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if I can tie this back around to what we were talking about earlier, you know, there's love and / limerence, and there's love / eroticism. And they're not the same, And we were commenting earlier that, you know, for the kind of marriage I want to be in, certainly, is where there's both of those things feel healthy and alive.
Sure.
And I have known those people we were just describing are there are amazing ways that people can sometimes find that they can experience an obstacle like this and actually experience that as erotically fulfilling, not necessarily, you know, it could be the sort of obstacle that increases eroticism, or it can be the sort of obstacle that says, wow, we just can't do this. And, you know, I'll give one other thing that Morin points out that I love to note, and it's part of why I love Morin so much. He says, you know, you can talk it when you talk about sex, there's the naughty version of sex where it's like, oh, this has to be controlled, and it's like, it's these are dirty things. And then there's the neat and clean version of sex that sex therapists have been all about for the last 50 years, which is it's just natural and neat and clean, and everybody has to not have anxiety about it. And then there's the paradoxical version, which is what Morin talks about, which I just love because you know I'm a sucker for paradoxes.
I know.
Yeah. And the paradoxical version is, you know, you look at these obstacles, any one of them at any given moment could be a powerful aphrodisiac or a powerful anti-aphrodisiac. The same damn things could be something that's like, ooh, that's scary, that's a turn on, or ooh, that's scary, forget it. And it's not, you know, it's almost a chaotic process. You can't always tell. And that itself, I think, is kind of exciting or else scary. You know what I mean? The fact that you really can't tell. So I think we've said what we're going to say about that
I think we
today.
have.
Indeed.
Yes. So if you have a question or a comment that you would like us to discuss on the air, you can write to Bruce at ctn7.com or me, Judy at ctn7.com, or just visit our website, ctn7.com. And you can send us your comments, your questions, or if you would like to be interviewed on our podcast, you can also sign up to be interviewed on our podcast.
And when you do that, you'll see that one of the things that the app will give you is a couple of questions about, gee, what do you want to talk about? And that's how we'll determine if we think you'll be a good fit. And you know what? I bet you will. I think a large majority of the folks who have done that, we have gone on to interview. There have been one or two that we said, yeah, probably not our bailiwick. But vast majority of folks who do that are, you're right. If you think you'd be good on our podcast, I'll bet you would.
You probably will.
So let us know.
And let's put in a couple of words for the books. It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong. And your previous book, Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. And the newsletter.
Dr. Chalmers' newsletter. All you have to do to get it is go to ctn7.com and click on the box that says something along the lines of sign
Sign up
up
for
for Dr. Chalmers' newsletter.
the
It's pretty unsubtle.
newsletter.
You'll see it, and it magically appears. I have always said this. It's worth going there just to see it magically appear because I'm like way too impressed with the fact that that was easy
There
to
you
do.
go.
So,
Great technology.
yeah, the technology, yes, it just grows before your eyes, and there it is.
And when you sign up for the newsletter, you get the bonus book.
Which is 7 words to jumpstart your love life. And you'll also, by the way, when you get the newsletter, you'll get an archive, a link to the archives for my newsletter so that you can check out the previous versions. I think I've just sent out number 6, I believe. So there are 6 previous issues of it. And I'll tell you what's in the newsletter. Every time there's a newsletter, there's, you know, some whatever news, that's a newsletter is going on. There's a relationship tip that will give you some, you know, nice ideas about how you can improve your relationship. And there's what's the big idea, which is essentially some of the ideas I write about in my book, except shorter and more informal. So please sign up for the newsletter.
There you go.
And one other thing we got to mention,
Oh,
if you, yeah,
yes,
exactly.
our
Merch!
merch.
If you go to ctn7.com and you go to the shop tab, you will see there is beautiful merchandise there. There are mugs in the 11 and 15 ounce sizes. There are t-shirts. There is a beautiful tote bag. We were toting that around Florida when we
We
were
were. I've
there.
been using it a lot lately.
Yeah.
It's very lightweight, and it's just great.
It's well, lightweight and strong.
And
It's a
strong
strong
and
material.
attractive, and as our folks, logo. And
yeah, we didn't, when we designed this merchandise, we made sure that it was quality stuff.
Absolutely.
And it's not even that expensive.
We would not give you schlock.
We would not. So I think we've covered what we need to cover.
I think we have.
And so until next time,
remember, be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.